This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm Kim Johnson, in for David Martin Davies. Say you're in a coffee shop, and unbeknownst to you, a stranger one table over is live-tweeting your conversation with a friend or an argument with a significant other. Is this person exercising their right to free speech via tweet, or did they violate your right to privacy? Maybe both. Does what you say or do in a public place, the grocery store, on a bus, at a bar, is that fair game for others to document online? A recent situation involving Twitter and multiple people on an airplane is shining a light on what we consider to be a reasonable expectation of privacy in the age of social media. At a time when so much of our lives are documented online, where do you draw the line when it comes to posting about other people? This is a community conversation, and we want to hear from you. Give us a call, 210-614-8980. You can also email thesource at tpr.org or tweet at us at tprsource. We're joined this hour by Luis Gestres. He's an assistant professor in the Department of Communication at the University of Texas at San Antonio. Thanks for being here, Luis.
Thank you for having me.
Jennifer Rothman is a law professor at Loyola Law School and author of The Right of Publicity, Privacy Reimagined for a Public World. Thanks for being here, Jennifer.
Thanks for having me.
And also with us on the line is Dan Solomon. He's a writer for Texas Monthly. He wrote an article on the subject. It's titled, Plain Bay Teaches Us That Other People Are Not a Movie for Us to Watch. Dan, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
So, Dan, you wrote about the situation that I referred to earlier, now known as this Plain Bay, hashtag Plain Bay. Can you tell us what happened? Just give us a recap.
Sure. So there was a couple on a flight from I don't remember where they were flying from, but flying to Dallas, and they were seated in rows. They weren't seated next to each other. They were seated in front of and behind each other. So they asked the people who were sitting in the row behind them, they asked the woman if she would switch so they could sit next to each other. She moved up a row and they stayed back a row. They made some joke about how maybe she'll fall in love with the guy sitting next to her, and then proceeded to document the conversation that they had over the course of the flight, and take photos and put it on social media to, you know, let people know that they seemed like they were getting cozy and they seemed to like each other. And the internet fell in love with this story and, you know, started following, trying to figure out who they were. They identified the man identified himself. The woman in the story didn't seem to want to be a part of it. And it went pretty quickly from being a cute story to being something that made people uncomfortable, because one of the people involved seemed interested in, you know, jumpstarting a social media modeling career off of this, and the other one seemed to want very little to do with it.
So basically, for this, it was a 4-hour flight, as far as I understand. These two individuals, their every move was being documented by the people behind them. And there was a bunch of innuendo as well involved in that conversation. Am I correct?
Yeah, there was a part where they both got up to use the bathroom at the same time that was, you know, maybe intended to suggest that they were going to the bathroom to have sex.
And the media cycle, as you mentioned, went through kind of a roller coaster of responses. First, it was the greatest love story ever told, and then it kind of went downhill from there. Am I right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was fun to watch. I contacted the woman who documented it and said, we'd like to do something on this. We didn't end up doing anything at the time, but I understood why it seemed like a fun story. You know, it felt like a romantic comedy sort of meet cute situation where these two people fell in love on a plane because the happenstance of a stranger asking them to switch seats.
I have her statement, actually, the woman who was part of this quote-unquote romance on the plane. She says, I am a young professional woman. On July 2nd, I took a commercial flight, and without my knowledge or consent, other passengers photographed me and recorded my conversations with a seatmate. They posted images and recordings to social media and speculated unfairly about my private conduct. Since then, my personal information has been widely distributed online. Strangers publicly discussed my private life based on patently false information. Voyeurs have come looking for me online and in the real world. Plain Bay is not a romance. It is a digital age cautionary tale about privacy, identity, ethics, and consent. Luis Gestres with UTSA, do you think this would be a completely different story if Helen, the woman that was being posted about, had a positive reaction to these tweets? Would we even be talking about this right now?
I think that some people might have still raised the issue of the documentation of these people's lives online. but I don't think that the reaction would have been nearly as severe. The fact that this woman, Helen, said very explicitly that she didn't want to be a part of the story and that she felt that her privacy had been violated, I think fueled the backlash against the story.
Absolutely. And I remember immediately afterward, we have to remember that the guy that was in this relationship is also a professional, you know, model and also, I think, a sports...
Ex-soccer player.
Soccer player, that's right. Let's hear a clip from him. He posted on Twitter in reaction to the entire situation.
From the moment I found out about the story on Tuesday, you know, I laughed. I chuckled to myself. I thought that the story was very well done. I thought that it was lighthearted. I thought that Rosie and her boyfriend, Houston, who I've gotten to know this week, are incredibly kind and caring people. They were so adamant on not releasing my identity and unless I was okay with it. And, you know, ultimately respecting that of the third person involved as well. I guess that brings me to my first point on privacy. You know, it's sad. It put a damper on the week that, you know, all it took was a few individuals so anxious and excited to find out more. You know, they went to the depths of really searching to find and reveal the identity of someone who didn't want to be, you know, found. And, you know, it's sad, really. I hope that this story, if nothing else, can shine light on the topic of privacy. And I think that in this day and age, there's a lot of people on the fence about not knowing what's right and what's wrong. So hopefully this can create a platform for positive talks and ultimately, you know, a step in the right direction.
So here we are having those positive talks, I guess, right now. And Dan, Rosie didn't reveal Helen's name or anything, but she sort of encouraged people to figure out who she was. Is that correct?
Yeah, there were some tweets about, you know, if you're a clever internet sleuth, you can track her down, which, you know, is kind of giving permission to people to violate her privacy and to go ahead and drag her into this, even if she didn't want to be.
And there's a term for that, Luis, it's doxing.
Yeah, that's right. Doxing is when individuals online dig up information about private information about other people online and then publish it online. So that's what happened to Helen in this particular case.
And this isn't something that happens every day, but the fact that this person didn't seem to think twice about posting this stuff and that hundreds of thousands of people nonchalantly liked and retweeted says something about how this kind of content has become much more normalized. And we really want to hear what y'all think. Is this freedom of expression? Was she just posting what she wants on her own social media and no one should be able to say anything about it? Or did she violate these people's privacy? What expectation of privacy should you have when everyone is able to instantly broadcast and post to social media? And if someone posted a viral video of you online, would you be angry? Would you be embarrassed? Would you laugh it off? Use it to your advantage, maybe ride that wave of fame. We want to hear what you think about privacy in the digital age. Give us a call, 210-614-8980. That's 210-614-8980. This is The Source, and we'll be back after this one-minute break. Welcome back to The Source. This is Kim Johnson, and I'm in for David Martin Davies today. Recently, a live chronicling of two people's interactions on an airplane went viral on Twitter without their knowledge. While one of them enjoyed and even reveled in the attention, the other was not at all happy with being thrust in the spotlight. Millions of images are shared online every day. Think about how many individual photos and videos of you are currently floating around in cyberspace. But what about photos and videos taken of you in a public place and posted to social media without your knowledge? For some, going viral is basically winning at the internet, and for others, it's not so glamorous. We're talking about personal privacy in the age of memes and going viral. We really want to hear your opinions on this. Give us a call, 210-614-8980. Before the break, we are talking about how this is sort of becoming normalized, and you know, people didn't really think twice. There were hundreds of thousands of retweets, likes. Dan, you pointed out in your article that the woman who posted the Twitter thread was certainly the instigator here, but she wasn't solely to blame. Explain what you meant by that.
Well, I mean, there were tens of thousands of people who were sharing it, who were interested in it, who sort of created the market for someone to post this thing. She's, you know, seems to be a savvy social media user, so she recognized that if you post this sort of thing, people are going to be interested in it. I don't think she expected that it would have found the audience that it did of, you know, tens of thousands of people. But we all exist in a sort of ecosystem where we're clicking on these things and encouraging people to do this sort of thing, to share things that they don't necessarily have the right to share in order to get these views and to, you know, to build their social media presence. So I think that, as you know, before people rush to condemn this one person, they need to consider also their own responsibility in creating a marketplace where this sort of content has value.
And I'm going to bring in Jennifer Rothman. She's a law professor at Loyola Law School, author of The Right of Publicity, Privacy Reimagined for a Public World. Jennifer, give us a refresher on the right to privacy for an average person in America. What does this right protect against?
Well, I think I might take one step back and just say that there are questions of ethics here and what is appropriate for people to do, which may be not to post images of people and film things without their permission. And then the law is a different thing, and sometimes you can do that and sometimes you cannot do that. And whether you can do it really focuses on three different laws, not just the right of privacy. One is recording statutes, and some states have statutes that ban the recording of people without their permission. So that itself can be illegal in many states. Second, many states have a right of privacy. And people hear about privacy rights, and it means a number of different things. So some are constitutionally provided. For example, the right to be free from government search and seizure. And that's the Fourth Amendment. And that's often when we talk about reasonable expectations of privacy in that context. And then there's also what's called decisional privacy, which might be having to do with being able to have the right to an abortion or to use contraceptives. But there's another kind of right of privacy, which is from something called tort law, which is basic civil law in the states. And that protects a number of different things, including the publication of private facts, which might pick up doxing. It includes intrusion into seclusion. So if someone comes into your house or is recording into your house using a microphone or video camera, that would apply as well. And it also includes something called the misappropriation of one's, usually likeness, but also name and likeness, sometimes voice. And so that aspect of the right of privacy might apply to these cases, as well as another related state law called the right of publicity, which is not about you made something public that wasn't known, but is about publicizing a person's name or likeness or voice without their permission.
So like in this case, the person who posted the thread was afterward trying to get a job at BuzzFeed and promote her own career. Is that using someone else's likeness to, I mean, does that fall under that category?
Well, yes, I think it might. So some states, so for example, let's take this example of the plane. The plane was going from New York to Dallas, and the laws of what applies on a plane depend a little bit in terms of where you took off and where you land. I don't know whether Texas law would apply or New York law. But New York law, for example, its right of privacy and right of publicity are one and the same, but the use has to be for advertising or trade purposes. So the question is, would the use in trying to get a job or sort of using it in a newspaper context count as trade purposes? And New York courts have suggested that if it's printed in a newspaper or magazine, that is for trade purposes. And there might be a defense that it's newsworthy or otherwise protected by the First Amendment, but it might fall into that umbrella. But if you're just posting it to your Twitter feed, that probably wouldn't. Texas law is a little broader. It doesn't have to be for a commercial purpose or commercial advantage, but it just needs to be for some advantage. So even trying to gin up more Twitter followers might fall into that category.
Interesting. Let's get a caller on the air. We have Melissa on the line. And if you want to join in, it's 210-614-8980. Melissa, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you.
Go ahead.
So I just had I had a thought. I worked in a lot of kids' events and programs, and when you register for those things, you have to sign as a parent whether you consent for a picture of your child to be posted to a website, an article about the event, and so on. And so kind of seeing that, I always have in the back of my mind, like, who is in my pictures that I'm posting, and just that you never know how a person feels about that. And you asked earlier what we thought about her posting this and if it was violating privacy. And I really think it was. I think if you're taking a picture of yourself or a group of people that you're kind of okay with and people are in the background, that's fine. But it was this specific person, and she posted things about her life, she's kind of being taken advantage of, she's been under attack. And I'm sure it was a lighthearted thing in the beginning, so, you know, maybe she didn't think about it. But I think in this day and age, with all the social media that we have, that needs to be in the back of our mind, that this is somebody's private life, and it really should not be taken advantage of, even for a really special moment or story.
Melissa, thank you so much for that call. I really appreciate you chiming in. As she mentions, these viral memes and videos that we share are of real people. And, you know, oftentimes we know their faces, but rarely know their names or stories. How does going viral affect a person momentarily thrust into the spotlight? How do you think they typically react? What are the perks and consequences of that, Luis?
Well, it really depends on the person. I think that, for example, with Ian Holden, the soccer player and that model in the plane-based story, he had already had, I think, an investment in publicizing himself. So if you're already invested in publicizing yourself in some way, then you probably welcome this kind of publicity. But if you're someone like Helen, who doesn't really have an investment, apparently, in publicizing yourself, then you might react the way she did, which was to recoil from the publicity.
And Jennifer, so Luis brings up that Ewan was sort of what I would consider to be already a public figure, and Helen was not. Does that change the way that they would be treated in general? Is he a public figure and therefore has less protections than Helen does?
Yes, so there's actually, and this is something I talk about in my book, that the law is in some ways currently rigged exactly the opposite of what you might think, so that public figures actually have more control about how their identities are used than private figures right now. And that's not necessarily true for the First Amendment coming to these cases, but the right of publicity has sometimes been applied more robustly when it comes to someone who has a commercial identity, because they're understood like they could be making money from this. So the guy who's already a public figure usually could get paid for the use of his name and image, and you didn't pay him. And so those claims, I think incorrectly, are having more traction than ones where there's a person who doesn't want to be out in public at all or have their image shared. And so in some respects, I think the dividing line between public and private figures is not necessarily the best one, particularly when they're both out in public, right? So it's not secret that they were on the plane. They knew that people were listening to them. What they didn't expect was for that video to then be shared and publicized. And so that, I think, is where the focus is. And then the question is, did those people have to be in that story? So it might have been very different if the person who filmed it wrote a story about it and didn't use their names or any identifying information. And that could have helped her journalistic career as well, but wouldn't have identified them. But by using their actual names and images, that was more problematic, and she didn't need those specific people to tell the story. And that's very different than, for example, I was involved in litigation with the FX Network over its miniseries Feud, and Olivia de Havilland, the two-time Academy Award-winning actress, sued over the miniseries and the use of a character based on her named Olivia de Havilland, paid by Catherine Zeta-Jones. There, you have to use Olivia de Havilland to tell the story. She's a real person who was part of the ongoing feud between Betty Davis and Joan Crawford. But two people having a romantic conversation on a plane, they could really be anyone. So I think there's less justification for those sorts of uses.
Dan, a blogger named Ella Dawson wrote a piece titled, "We Are All Public Figures Now." She says, "You become a public figure the instant that someone else decides you're worthy of interest." What are your reactions to that?
Well, I think that there's, you know, a unfortunate truth to that. We are all, you know, everyone is now a recording studio and a broadcaster. And so it's these lines are very different from how they've been throughout the years. So to some extent, it makes sense that if everyone is a publisher, then everyone is also a public figure. I don't think that that's something we're equipped to deal with right now. And we haven't really had the conversations necessary to figure out if that's the world we're comfortable with. But it's definitely something we've defaulted into.
Jennifer, you mentioned earlier that privacy and publicity rights can clash with First Amendment and free speech interests. Who typically wins that fight?
It depends. It depends very much on the nature of the use and why it's being used, and also who the identity holder is, the person whose image or name is being used. So this is where public figure actually is a term of art in the law, separate from how we use it in everyday speech. And so there's generally more latitude to use the identities of public figures under the First Amendment. And so we get more of a right because they have entered the public debate, and it's important that we're able to talk about them. So that's an instance where private figures do have more protection from being talked about in public. On the other hand, if they enter a matter of public concern, then all of a sudden they would lose their rights. And also, the fact that they here we've created a controversy around it. Should it have been posted? Should it not have? All of a sudden, now it is a newsworthy issue, and so there probably would be at least a First Amendment defense for talking about them and replaying it for people who are commenting on it.
So what, if anything, can be done about it after the content's out there? I mean, Helen, she got a public apology from the woman who posted the thread, which is more than most people get when they're made viral. But is there any legal recourse for Helen at this point?
Well, there are some potential ones, and there's potential liability for recording people without their permission, and you would need to check what laws applied given where they were in airspace and whether it was the law of New York or the law of Texas that applied. And there also could potentially be a right of publicity claim or a misappropriation-based privacy claim for the use of her name and image without her permission. Now, she wasn't identifiable. It would certainly be, I mean, she was later identified, but the use wasn't necessarily identifiable more broadly. So it would be an uphill battle, but this may be, I think, an area where we're going to see a lot more litigation about some of these things where people's images are being taken and used without their permission, using the right of publicity rather than more privacy, traditional privacy-based claims. Because we are living our lives in public. Being on a plane is in public. If you share a photo on Facebook, it may get reused. Facebook has even used people's images in advertising for products without their permission. And certainly, as your earlier caller mentioned, we're asked to sign consent forms all the time for uses of our names and likenesses. Facebook, in their terms of services, has such a provision. Schools are asking you to sign it for your kids, and people should be very cautious about what those forms include because they could potentially transfer rights to your name and likeness to a third party. And you may not be able to reclaim them.
Oh, thanks, Jennifer. I want to talk to our callers. Give us a call. Do you ever worry about someone taking your photo and turning it into internet content? Maybe it's a photo you uploaded a long time ago and forgot about. Maybe you didn't even know someone was taking a video. 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The source will be right back.
Love is in the air, quite literally for one couple who met on an airplane, and their budding romance was documented on Twitter. This is so cute. So real-life couple Houston and Rosie were on their way to Dallas and asked a woman, Helen, to switch seats so they could sit together. Little did they know that they sent Helen to sit next to her soulmate, who just so happened to be a former pro soccer player and model, Ewan Holden. Rosie and Houston live tweeted the entire flight where Helen and Ewan really seemed to hit it off. Rosie wrote, "They they are flirting and snapped the first moment they touched elbows. The excitement grew as Rosie and Houston watched, along with the rest of the world. Rosie's thread quickly became a Twitter sensation, and the initial tweet has nearly 1 million likes. But how did it end? Well, after the plane landed, Rosie and Houston documented the new couple leaving together. This love story went so viral that Rosie, Houston, and Ewan appeared on the Today Show this week talking about the romance. Ewan, aka Plane Bay, was just gushing over Helen, who was too shy to appear on TV.
Welcome back to The Source. I'm Kim Johnson in for David Martin Davies. This story you just heard recounted, known as Plane Bay, is an example of how muddied the waters are when it comes to personal privacy versus freedom of expression on social media. We laugh at and share viral videos and memes, but often the subjects are innocent people made internet famous by no fault or force of their own. And when you're sharing a meme, you probably don't think about the person who's in it. Suddenly the, you know, target of mockery almost most of the time. Should you assume everything you say and do in public could end up on the internet? Is everything you post online subject to potential memification? If you say it in public, is it fair game? Do people need to be more careful about what they do in public? We want to hear what you think about this. Give us a call, 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. And Luis, we're talking during the break about the platforms themselves. Tell me, are they encouraging this kind of spreading of content? Are they curtailing it at all? Are they monitoring it? Tell me about that.
Well, the platforms are definitely fueling this type of accelerated sharing. Keep in mind that the services that we use, like Facebook and Twitter and so on, even though they may be billed as free, they're actually not free. The currency that you, the way that you pay for these services is through your interactions and through the data that you share through these services. And so these platforms are built for speed. They're like shiny sports cars. They're built to be driven very fast and without a lot of thought. And the platforms, the corporations that run the platforms benefit from our often unthinking sharing of tweets and Facebook posts and so on through these platforms. So the platforms and their designers definitely fueling the kind of sharing that we saw with this particular episode.
Dan, would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think so. I think that, you know, these platforms need to grow. And one of the ways they grow is by people sharing things. And, you know, the idea that you can go on to Twitter and see this kind of story might get a couple of new Twitter users. And it'll definitely keep people who already use Twitter engaged on the platform, which is what they need. They need people to spend more time on it.
And we know things can easily be taken out of context online. And then inevitably come the trolls. And Luis, for anyone not familiar with the term, can you explain trolling and what that looks like on social media?
Well, basically a troll is someone who is sort of maliciously doing things online to hurt someone, another online user, for their amusement or entertainment. So in the case of Helen, in this particular case, there were trolls who were digging up her personal information and posting it online and identifying her, even though she did not want to be identified. So that's classic troll behavior. And I think that as we, you know, as social media use continues to grow, and we're often tempted to share things like this, we have to keep in mind that trolls almost always come with the package. There's for every cute story, like the Plane Bay story, there's always at least one troll who is all too willing to do something negative that will probably ruin the story for everyone. So that's important to keep in mind when sharing things online.
And also with the whole doxing thing, you know, it's one thing to troll someone online, but then when someone digs up your name and your address and maybe your place of business, then
your social security number
can turn into a whole different ball game. Mm-hmm. Dan, you wrote, "The internet's hunger for content can be all consuming, and the people who never signed up for any of it can end up the meal." And that sounds really scary, but it's not always a negative experience for the subject, is it?
Well, no. I mean, some people, you know, the guy on the plane was excited to go viral. It helped, you know, his budding modeling career. And so I think that the problem is that we don't talk about, like, we don't talk to people before we do this. So you don't know if the person involved is going to be excited or not. And, you know, I think that the couple on the plane were people who had social media presences, who had ambitions around having more of a media presence. So the idea that someone might not want that probably just didn't even occur to them. But I think that that's kind of the issue here, is that some people might want this and some people might not. And if we're not having those conversations first, then it doesn't matter if you want it or not.
You you talked about a really good example, I think, of the pros and cons of viral fame is Alex from Target. Can you tell us about that situation and what resulted in, you know, afterwards?
Yeah. Alex from Target was a young man. I think he was in high school at the time, who worked at a Target in North Texas. He was a cute kid, and somebody took a picture and put him on Twitter, and kind of all of the thirsty young people on Twitter decided that they were really into Alex from Target. He became viral just because he was handsome while working at Target. And he had to deal with the social media fallout of that. It was thrilling for him at first, and then it seems like it got a little bit tougher. He comes and goes from social media at this point. He'll launch an Instagram to, you know, try and build his brand as a personal trainer. I think he's 20, 21 now. So he'll do it for a little while to try and develop something, and then something about it seems to make him uncomfortable and he deletes it again. I've never spoken to him, but it seems like he's got kind of conflicted opinions about it, which makes sense because it gave him a lot of opportunities he never expected, and then it's also come with some consequences that he never considered.
But, you know, a lot of times people use this as a way to catapult themselves into internet stardom. You know, they really use it to their advantage. Jennifer, do you think that that in and of itself makes them a public figure?
Well, I think, I mean, everyone is in some sense a public figure because we're living our lives in public, but for legal purposes, you need to be either part of some sort of public debate or newsworthy story or actually be more broadly in the public eye. So Alex in Target would not be, even though he was in public. But I think that the right of publicity can still apply even to private figures, and I think that addressing many of these things we'll start to see courts being more willing to apply right of publicity laws to what we might consider to be private figures. And I think that this moment, this cultural change that we're experiencing where everything is going up online and people are live streaming us, is very similar to another moment in time in this country where we adopted the right of privacy. And I talk somewhat about that in the book, and that is the rise of instantaneous photography. So people were used to walk on the street and no one was documenting them. Then all of a sudden, Kodak and others had these cameras that just a regular person could take pictures of someone on the street. And there was an outcry, and state legislatures started adopting a right of privacy to stop those uses. And I think the right of publicity could be used in those ways, or we might start to see state legislatures doing more specific laws to address some of these. And some of the uses that Luis was talking about, the troll-like behavior and the doxing, may be also part of a claim, a state law claim called intentional infliction of emotional distress. So that's like a whole other area that we could see some action. And I think we may need to see more people who are more willing to sue about these things. No one likes lawsuits. But I think we'll also see, and we can put pressure on the intermediaries to take some of this material down. And I think the plane video, at least in some places, has been taken down. And that's something that the intermediaries can do on their own, which raises another host of free speech concerns.
Absolutely. I want to hear from our listeners. Are you thinking about, when you're in public, are you thinking about the fact that you might be being recorded? Are you, you know, more paranoid or precautious about these concerns? Or do you just live your life and whatever happens, happens, and whoever can post whatever? I want to hear your opinions. 210-614-8980. And right now, let's listen to some opinions from, this is a CBS affiliate in New York, and they went out on the street and asked some locals for their views on the subject.
Experts say these days the elevator rule applies pretty much everywhere, meaning assume that anything you say in public is being overheard by someone nearby.
It's public domain. I really think, you know, if you want to remain private, don't talk in public with around people that may be recording you. I think you're responsible for that.
We have freedom of speech, and then we have the right to privacy. Who draws the line between the two? I don't know.
Public domain or privacy invasion? Unless you're in your own home, silence seems to be the only way to ensure you don't end up as clickbait.
How has social media changed our ideas about and expectations of personal privacy? Would you be okay being unknowingly catapulted into internet fame? How do we balance personal privacy with freedom of expression? Call in, tell us how you feel, 210-614-8980. Luis, how would you feel if somebody posted a video of you that went viral?
I would be mortified.
Yeah?
Yes. I'm a very private person, so I would be mortified personally.
Jennifer, how about yourself?
I also am a private person, so I would not want that. But sometimes I give public lectures, and I expect that people will take pictures of that or that videos will be posted of that.
Makes sense. How about you, Dan?
I guess it depends what I'm doing in the video that goes
right?
viral. You know, I think that it's better to get people's consent, and I'd want, you know, before someone posted a bunch of videos or photos of me doing something in public, I'd like for them to ask.
Very cool. We want to hear what our listeners think as well. 210-614-8980. You can also email the source at tpr.org. We'll be right back after this break. Welcome back to The Source. I'm Kim Johnson, and for David Martin Davies. Should you assume everything you say and do in public could end up on the internet? We're talking this hour about social media and personal privacy, and you can join the conversation by calling 210-614-8980. And I want to talk now, some content goes viral because it exposes some actions or alleged injustices that would never have otherwise, you know, been noticed, but there's a video. What immediately comes to mind most recently is the barbecue Becky, or the also known as the white woman calling the cops. Dan, can you tell me about that one?
Yeah, that was the woman in, I think it was in Oakland, who called the police because there were some black people having a barbecue and she didn't think they belonged in the park. And she was documented, and that did go viral in the same way. I think that there's a distinction there about what's in the public interest and what isn't. So I think that you can make the argument that someone who's calling the police on strangers for no reason, except, you know, what seems like a racial motivation, might be in the public interest, whereas two people sitting next to each other on an airplane having a private conversation isn't.
And she's been, you know, memeified herself now. She's been ironically photoshopped into images from Black history, from MLK's I Have a Dream speech to Rosa Parks on a bus and Soul Train and screenshots from Black Panther. So she herself, you know, her identity was revealed. She was publicly shamed. But you're right, the video did bring attention to an important social issue. So do you find value in this kind of viral content taken without permission for the, you know, supposed greater good, Luis?
I think there's a value in that kind of use of social media, especially because we're at a stage right now where taking, for example, racism, so much of the progress that we still have to make when it comes to racism comes down to individual behavior, you know, individuals, instances of discrimination or racism or something like that. So I think in instances like this, there is a value to sharing those kinds of behavior. But at the same time, it has to be weighed against people's rights to privacy and so on. In this case, there have been videos that have been posted, for example, where I remember one of a woman who was yelling racist epithets at a clerk at a store or something like that. In that example, I think that person is bringing attention to herself. So maybe the claim to the right to privacy doesn't apply. But if in the case of someone making a phone call, it might be trickier. So I think what these cases highlight is that a lot of the thinking that we have to do around these issues comes down to norms and not so much down to the law. It comes down to the unwritten agreements that we come to amongst each other about what we're going to share and not share. And those norms right now are very much in flux.
Let's get some callers' opinions on this. This is Trey. Trey, welcome to The Source. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Thank you. I was just curious what you guys thought. With my insurance company, with my vehicle, they do encourage a on-dash camera. As those things kind of encroach upon our privacy and lives, we also see the more common doorbells with, you know, video cameras and more cameras on houses. Those are called apps for neighborhoods, so we watch out for other people that are in the neighborhood looking suspicious, but they may not be at all. Do you have any opinion about that?
Thank you, Trey, for that call. Jennifer, do you want to respond to that?
Well, with regard to the sort of onboard system in your cars, they can listen to you and record you, and they can do so. They can also be enabled by law enforcement if they have a warrant to do so. So that you can certainly expect that nothing you say is necessarily private. In that context, in terms of being secret, but it would still be viewed by courts where you would have an expectation of privacy in that context. Now, the other systems, the doorbell systems like Ring and others that record video, are changing your experience just of walking on the street. People are seeing who's coming to their door, who's on the street, and sometimes calling, which may raise some of the concerns that came up with Barbecue Becky, where people are calling because they saw somebody on a video who maybe for racial motives, or maybe that the person is just not familiar in the neighborhood. So I think we'll see more than that, but that goes exactly to why we can't rely on our expectations of being private, or in the sense of being unrecorded in public, and we need to start shifting our focus to how can we control these uses, and when do we need permission to use someone else's identity and when do we not? And that's really a spectrum. So we might think that revealing racism or recording police activities that may be problematic, those are things that are in the public interest. Picking people up who are just walking down the street or on a plane or in a coffee shop and sharing that seems not to be in the public interest.
Let's get another caller on the air. This is Janet. Janet, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you. I was just wondering if you guys had considered the physical and psychological ramifications to someone being posted who's maybe being the target of stalking.
That is an interesting point. Jennifer, do you want to take that one as well?
So that goes very much to harm. I think many of these, or some of these postings, are going to rise to the level of being legally actionable, recording illegally in some places, causing intentional infliction of emotional distress, maybe right of publicity or right of privacy violations, depending on state laws. So what you're getting at is the harm to people, which may go to what they can recover in a legal action, which may, as a practical matter, affect who's willing to take these cases. But then there are going to be other people who are like, oh, I don't mind going viral. In fact, I love it. And they're not going to bring lawsuits. And if they did, they wouldn't have a lot of damages. But other people are going to be devastated by it and will have ongoing psychological and medical problems as well as professional harms. And they're going to have substantial damages that may merit some sort of legal action. But knowing that these sorts of harms are possible, regardless of the law, suggests that people should be more conscious and considerate of other people's feelings in this instance and think carefully before they share the videos.
What do you think about that, Dan?
I think that's right. I mean, I think that, you know, I'm not a lawyer, and that's not my perspective on this. So, you know, my perspective on it is usually just, can we be more conscientious? Can we be more thoughtful towards each other? Can we think about what we're putting out there, and you know, what are the potential repercussions? What's the worst thing that could happen to someone if I do this thing that I'm not really giving much thought to and that I think is cute? Could it have repercussions that are a lot more serious for someone else? And if the answer to that is yeah, it might, then really give a lot of thought as to why you would do it.
Especially, I want to talk to you about kids in these situations. Like, we have kids that became memes, like the Success Kid or Skeptical Baby, and videos like Charlie Bit My Finger. In all three of those cases, their parents uploaded the videos and photos of, and the internet just took it from there. I'm sure they had no idea it would go viral, but still, they put it online. What happens in that situation, Jennifer? Do they have any recourse? Can they take that back?
So one of my main concerns and something that I talk about in the book is that parents actually control the rights of their children to the children's names and likenesses. So most parents are well-intentioned, but some may share the videos or assign the rights to the kids' identities to third parties. And this particularly happens in the world of modeling and acting, right? Child models and child actors. But parents should also be very aware that when they put anything on Facebook, someone else can share it. Facebook, the terms of service on Facebook allow Facebook to use it in advertising, to even give permission to third parties to use it.
And can you opt out of things like that on social media platforms?
No. You cannot. And some you may be able to, but the Facebook terms of service are very clear that Facebook can use your image. Now, they won't own the copyright, but it gives them permission to use your images in different contexts, including in advertising. So I personally do not put my children's images on Facebook. And just to add into the mix, with facial recognition technology where it's at, putting your kids' pictures online also means that they will be able to be digitally recognized and picked up elsewhere.
Let's go back, before we're done here, let's go back to, you know, the not legal aspect of it, the ethical, the moral. You can't dictate how people act in public, and but even if it's not illegal, I feel like there's a line that I think most people realize or at least suspect that they're crossing. Do you agree, Luis?
I think most people are aware of that line. I think that some people aren't, and that the platforms that we rely on, like Facebook and Twitter, make it a lot easier for people like that to then post this kind of content online. So I think that definitely all of us as social media consumers and users have to become more thoughtful about what we post, but we also need to start looking at the functionality that the social media platforms provide and see if there are any technological remedies that we can implement that would make it a little easier for people to maybe think twice about posting something or provide some recourse in case something gets posted that is delicate.
And real quick, just in 30 seconds, Dan, do you have any last thoughts?
No, I mean, I think that the most important thing is just to be conscientious about this, to recognize that you're not only should you be considerate when you're deciding whether or not to photograph someone or record them, but also to give some thought about how you share that stuff, even if you're not the one who made it. Because we all, by creating the market for it, end up creating incentives for other people to do this, even if we don't do it ourselves.
Just being a little more conscious in our everyday social media use. I want to thank our guests today, Luis Gestres. He's an assistant professor in the Department of Communication at UTSA here in San Antonio. Jennifer Rothman, law professor at Loyola Law School and author of The Right of Publicity, Privacy Reimagined for a Public World. Also with us has been Dan Solomon, writer for Texas Monthly. His article is up on their website. It's just search for Plain Bay. How about that? My name is Kim Johnson. I'm in for David Martin Davies today, and we really appreciate you tuning us in. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio.